Well, there's more swelling, but the pus is gone, I say in an unsteady voice.
I know what blood poisoning is, Katniss, says Peeta, even if my mother isn't a healer.
You're just going to have to outlast the others, Peeta. They'll cure it back at the Capitol when we win, I say.
Yes, that's a good plan, he says.
But I feel this is mostly for my benefit. You have to eat. Keep your strength up. I'm going to make you soup, I say.
Don't light a fire, he says. It's not worth it.
We'll see, I say. As I take the pot down to the stream, I'm struck by how brutally hot it is. I swear the game makers are progressively ratcheting up the temperature in the daytime and sending it plummeting at night. The heat of the sun-baked stones by the stream gives me an idea, though. Maybe I won't need to light a fire. I settle down on a big flat rock halfway between the stream and the cave. After purifying half a pot of water, I place it in direct sunlight and add several egg-sized hot stones to the water. I'm the first to admit I'm not much of a cook. But since soup mainly involves tossing everything in a pot and waiting, it's one of my better dishes. I mince grousling until it's practically mush and mash some of Rue's roots. Fortunately, they've both been roasted already, so they mostly need to be heated up. Already between the sunlight and the rocks, the water's warm. I put in the meat and roots, swap in fresh rocks, and go find something green to spice it up a little. Before long, I discover a tuft of chives growing at the base of some rocks. Perfect. I chop them very fine and add them to the pot, switch out the rocks again, put on the lid, and let the whole thing stew. I've seen very few signs of game around, but I don't feel comfortable leaving Peeta alone while I hunt, so I rig half a dozen snares and hope I get lucky. I wonder about the other tributes, how they're managing now that their main source of food has been blown up. At least three of them, Cato, Clove, and Foxface, had been relying on it. Probably not Thresh, though. I've got a feeling he must share some of Rue's knowledge on how to feed yourself from the earth. Are they fighting each other? Looking for us? Maybe one of them has located us and is just waiting for the right moment to attack. The idea sends me back to the cave. Peeta stretched out on top of the sleeping bag in the shade of the rocks. Although he brightens a bit when I come in, it's clear he feels miserable. I put cool cloths on his head, but they warm up almost as soon as they touch his skin. Do you want anything? I ask.
No, he says. Thank you. Wait, yes. Tell me a story.
A story? What about? I say. I'm not much for storytelling. It's kind of like singing. But once in a while, Prim wheedles one out of me.
Something happy? Tell me about the happiest day you can remember, says Peeta.
Something between a sigh and a huff of exasperation leaves my mouth. A happy story? This will require a lot more effort than the soup. I rack my brains for good memories. Most of them involve Gale and me out hunting, and somehow I don't think these will play well with either Peeta or the audience. That leaves Prim. Did I ever tell you about how I got Prim's goat? I ask. Peeta shakes his head and looks at me expectantly. So I begin, but carefully, because my words are going out all over Pan Am. And while people have no doubt put two and two together that I hunt illegally, I don't want to hurt Gale or Greasy Say or the Butcher or even the peacekeepers back home who are my customers by publicly announcing they're breaking the law, too. Here's the real story of how I got the money for Prim's goat, lady. It was a Friday evening, the day before Prim's 10th birthday in late May. As soon as school ended, Gale and I hit the woods because I wanted to get enough to trade for a present for Prim. Maybe some new cloth for a dress or a hairbrush? Our snares had done well enough, and the woods were flush with greens, but this was really no more than our average Friday night haul. I was disappointed as we headed back, even though Gale said we'd be sure to do better tomorrow. We were resting a moment by a stream when we saw him. A young buck, probably a yearling by his size. His antlers were just growing in, still small and coated in velvet, poised to run but unsure of us, unfamiliar with humans. Beautiful. Less beautiful, perhaps, when the two arrows caught him, one in the neck, the other in the chest. Gale and I had shot at the same time. The buck tried to run but stumbled, and Gale's knife slit his throat before he knew what had happened. Momentarily, I felt a pang at killing something so fresh and innocent. And then my stomach rumbled at the thought of all that fresh and innocent meat. A deer. Gale and I have only brought down 3 in all. The first one, a doe that had injured her leg somehow, almost didn't count. But we knew from that experience not to go dragging the carcass into the hob. It had caused chaos with people bidding on parts and actually trying to hack off pieces themselves. Greasy Say had intervened and sent us with our deer to the butcher, but not before it had been badly damaged, hunks of meat taken, the hide riddled with holes. Although everybody paid up fairly, it had lowered the value of the kill. This time, we waited until dark fell and slipped under a hole in the fence close to the butcher. Even though we were known hunters, it wouldn't have been good to go carrying a 150-pound deer through the streets of District 12 in daylight like we were rubbing it in the officials' faces. The butcher, a short, chunky woman named Ruba, came to the back door when we knocked. You don't haggle with Ruba. She gives you one price, which you can take or leave, but it's a fair price. We took her offer on the deer, and she threw in a couple of venison steaks we could pick up after the butchering. Even with the money divided in two, neither Gale nor I had held so much at one time in our lives. We decided to keep it a secret and surprise our families with the meat and money at the end of the next day. This is where I really got the money for the goat, but I tell PETA I sold an old silver locket of my mother's. That can't hurt anyone. Then I pick up the story in the late afternoon of Prim's birthday. Gale and I went to the market on the square so that I could buy dress materials. As I was running my fingers over a length of thick blue cotton cloth, something caught my eye. There's an old man who keeps a small herd of goats on the other side of the seam. I don't know his real name. Everyone just calls him the Goat Man. His joints are swollen and twisted in painful angles, and he's got a hacking cough that proves he spent years in the mines. But he's lucky. Somewhere along the way, he saved up enough for these goats and now has something to do in his old age besides slowly starve to death. He's filthy and impatient, but the goats are clean and their milk is rich if you can afford it. One of the goats, a white one with black patches, was lying down in a cart. It was easy to see why. Something, probably a dog, had mauled her shoulder and infection had set in. It was bad. The goat man had to hold her up to milk her, but I thought I knew someone who could fix it. Gale, I whispered, I want that goat for Prim. Owning a nanny goat can change your life in District 12. The animals can live off almost anything, the meadow's a perfect feeding place, and they can give 4 quarts of milk a day. To drink, to make into cheese, to sell. It's not even against the law.
She's hurt pretty bad, said Gale. We better take a closer look.
We went over and bought a cup of milk to share, then stood over the goat as if idly curious.
Let her be, said the man.
Just looking, said Gale.
Well, look fast. She goes to the butcher soon. Hardly anyone will buy her milk, and then they only pay half price, said the man.
What's the butcher giving for her? I asked. The man shrugged.
Hang around and see.
I turned and saw Ruba coming across the square toward us.
Lucky thing you showed up, said the goat man when she arrived. Girl's got her eye on your goat.
Not if she's spoken for, I said carelessly. Ruba looked me up and down, then frowned at the goat.
She's not. Look at that shoulder. Bet you half the carcass will be too rotten for even sausage.
What?
Said the goat man.
We had a deal.
We had a deal on an animal with a few teeth marks.
Not that thing. Sell her to the girl if she's stupid enough to take her, said Ruba. As she marched off, I caught her wink. The goat man was mad, but he still wanted that goat off his hands. It took us half an hour to agree on the price. Quite a crowd had gathered by then to hand out opinions. It was an excellent deal if the goat lived. I'd been robbed if she died. People took sides in the argument, but I took the goat.